Unfettered Mind.
Hello, I'm Ken McLeod. Working with difficult or painful emotions is something everyone encounters in their practice. These 8 teachings from a retreat I taught give you ways of letting go of the reactions associated with powerful emotions, so you don't have to suppress them or express them in the world. In the second episode in the series, I mention a practice based on material developed by Thich Nhat Hanh. It's called Seeing from the Inside, or the 5-Step Mindfulness Practice, and you can find a copy on my website, unfetteredmind.org. And now, part 1 of Releasing Emotional Reactions. Jacks the volume up, and then you take out all the hiss control. The content of the subject matter of the retreat is releasing emotional reactions. Now, Nasruddin wanted to steal some fruit from a stall. Everybody here knows that Nasruddin is my favorite Buddhist teacher, right? Okay. Nasruddin wanted to steal some fruit from a stall. But the stall holder had a fox which kept watch. He overheard the man say to his fox, "Foxes are craftier than dogs, and I want you to guard the stall with cunning. There are always thieves about. When you see anyone doing anything, ask yourself why he is doing it and whether it can be related to the security of the stall." When the man had gone away, the fox came to the front of the stall and looked at Nasruddin lurking on the lawn opposite. Nasruddin at once lay down and closed his eyes. The fox thought, "Sleeping is not doing anything." As he watched Nasruddin, he too began to feel tired. He lay down and went to sleep. Then Nasruddin crept past him and stole some fruit. Okay. How many of you have experienced Nasruddin stealing some fruit? How many of you have gone to sleep because you thought your emotional reactions weren't doing anything? And then you wake up and you find that they're in full swing. That's what this, maybe one of the things this story is about. We react emotionally to things. Or the emotional reactions take us over because we regard the emotions as something real, something solid. We believe them. They're the fact. They define the world. So when something happens with our spouse, we get angry. The emotion is saying, "This person is your enemy." And we believe it and react accordingly. We have this kind of thing all over the place. The point here is that we react because we fall out of knowing our experience. We fall out of really knowing what is happening. Now, the knowing that I'm talking about is not like, "Yeah, I understand, I know what you're talking about." That's a conceptual thing. The knowing that I'm talking about is being in the experience and awake at the same time. When we make that effort, life becomes much, much richer. But it also appears to be much more inconvenient because we're experiencing everything, including all of the uncomfortable feelings that we ordinarily try to avoid and which actually trip us into emotional reaction. So the purpose of our retreat is to develop an increased capacity to know our experience. When you know experience completely, then what arises as emotion is an experience. And you can know it completely. And the nature of experience is that it releases when it is experienced completely. And you've all had that experience. Some of you have had it in your meditation, but all of us have had it in our lives. That is, there will be some irritation that we're feeling, or maybe some joy or love or affection or feeling of accomplishment or something like that. And there's this edge and tension or frustration. But when circumstances arise, then we can actually just go, yeah, this is what I'm feeling. It's like, ah. And then it dissipates. It releases. And if you look at it in possibly slightly overly simplistic way, but what is the function of a feeling? What does a feeling live for? It lives to be felt. So whenever we're avoiding feeling what's arising, we're actually introducing an imbalance into our world of experience because of things that are arising which we are not letting ourselves experience. And they keep knocking at the door. And they can be quite persistent. And the more that we push them away, the more circuitous and devious they become in trying to get attention. So what we're doing in this retreat is actually learning how just to give them attention. We're going to work with three different techniques. The first technique is based on one of the fundamental sutras in Buddhism, in Sanskrit or Pali, I suppose. It's called the Anapanasati Sutra, which basically translates the full awareness of breathing. And is a technique which I learned from my colleague and friend Yvonne Rand, who in turn learned it from Thich Nhat Hanh. And it's his adaptation of the Full Awareness of Breathing Sutra. Very simple, very profound, and very helpful for many people. That's Thursday. On Friday, we'll work with another technique which many of you are familiar with, and that's the practice of taking and sending, which is a Mahayana technique based on compassion that works very, very much in the vein that I'm talking about creating the conditions so that we can experience what is arising completely. And then on Saturday, we'll work with a practice which is derived from Dzogchen, which is one of the advanced awareness practices in the Tibetan tradition. And again, it's very much in the same vein. Now, Thich Nhat Hanh's practice is a five-step practice. The Dzogchen practice is a five-step practice. And so I'm going to be talking about the taking and sending as a five-step practice too. So you're going to end up with three different approaches. And part of the reason for this is that there are many different levels of experience here. And there's also, everybody's different in their proclivities. And my hope is that through learning each of these three techniques, you will have a number of tools in your pocket to be able to work with emotions, reactive emotions, in your daily life. My main intention in this retreat is for you to gain sufficient practical experience in each of these techniques so that you understand how they work, not just intellectually, but experientially. That may seem like a lot to accomplish in one day for each, but I'm optimistic. I'm pretty sure we can do that. The key principle in all of this is whatever tool you're using to experience things as completely as possible. And this does not mean to think about them. It means to rest in the actual experience. So tomorrow morning, when we get up to meditate, I want you to take the first session and practice resting in experience. Now, for many of you, this is not new material, but for some of you, this is. So I'm going to go over these instructions again, and I think it'll be helpful. We sit, and there's an old expression in Tibetan, body on the cushion, mind in the body, relaxation in the mind. So we start with the body, and you sit appropriately, the body in balance, the back straight, and the body, the skeletal frame being used to support the body so there isn't a lot of muscular tension. And it's very good to start any meditation period by just resting in the body, letting it settle naturally. So you may shrug your shoulders, dissipate any little tension there, and rock a little bit so you feel firm in your seat. And then just let the body find its resting in stillness. And then you'll be, as you do that, you'll naturally become aware of the breath. And just let the body breathe. Let the breath find its own rhythm. Don't try to breathe in any particular way. Now, as you do this, you may notice that there's tightness in this area, or maybe tightness in this area, or tightness in this area. And you think, oh, I've got to get rid of that tightness so I can breathe more fully. In the approach that we're taking, I'm going to recommend that you don't try to get rid of the tightness. That's your first experience. Okay? Just experience the tightness. Any tension in the body, don't try to get rid of it. Just experience it. And you'll find that as you experience it, things shift and adjust in ways you may or may not be familiar with, but they take care of themselves, for the most part. So now you're resting in your body, and the body's breathing. And now you rest in the experience of breathing. The usual meditation instruction is, now watch the breath with your mind. And that immediately introduces a separation. Yeah, I'm here, breath there, I'm going to watch it. Rather than that, just be in the experience of breathing. Be aware of your body breathing. All the different aspects of your body that are involved in the breathing. Expansion and contraction of the stomach. Rising and falling of the diaphragm. Flow of air at the back of the throat. Flow of breath through the nostrils. The sensations of temperature and so forth. Oh, and that's just a few of the facets of breathing. Many, many more that you discover for yourself. But don't concentrate on the breath. Just rest in the experience of breathing. Now what happens, of course, is that a thought arises. And the next thing we know, we're thinking about our trip here, what we're going to do after the retreat, or what we had for dinner 3 days ago, or what our boss said to us the other day, and how we're going to get even with him finally, this one at a time, and so forth. I mean, all kinds of stuff. And the thoughts come up, and we're gone. Sarah Hawk was an Indian master who wrote a number of songs expressing his understanding and realization, which have survived to this day. And they've been translated into English. But one of the verses runs roughly, "Mind is like a bird in the middle of the ocean, on a ship in the middle of the ocean. A thought flies up, and no matter how far away the bird flies from the ship, the bird has to come back to the ship." So it doesn't matter what thoughts arise. Sooner or later, that thought's going to dissolve and you're going to come back. And when you come back, there's going to be, oh. Which is usually followed by, you're meant to be meditating. Now, there you go, wandering again. There's all the kind of chit-chat. But there always comes a point where you just come back. Oh. And what I encourage you to do, when that happens, come back to your body. Come back to the breathing. Come back to resting in the experience of breathing. Don't bother chastising yourself. That's just more thought. Don't even worry about whether you're doing it right or wrong. Come back to your body. Come back to the breathing in the body. Come back to resting in the experience of breathing. Body on the cushion. Mind in the body. Relaxation in the mind. So you rest in the experience of breathing. And whenever you recognize that you've been distracted by whatever, say to yourself thought and come back to the experience of breathing. Checking the body quickly, the breath, and then resting in the experience. Now, that's the meditation we'll do tomorrow morning. And then in the morning teaching period, I will introduce the five-step process of working with emotional reactions. And then you'll have a chance to practice that and talk about it in the interviews. And then in the afternoon, I'll offer some additional commentary perspectives on it. And then continue that practice in the evening, then the next day we'll start another practice, so forth. So that's what we're going to do in the retreat. Many of you have practices that you regularly. What I suggest you do is you take one of the half-hour practices and do that practice so that you keep that practice going. You don't disrupt or interrupt that practice. But the rest of the time you spend it on the subject matter, on the practice meditations that we're doing in the retreat. With that, I'm happy to take up any questions. All clear? Marianne.
I think there was a song here.
Oh. Well, you're talk to Alicia afterwards about that.
Okay. Diana was talking about relations to stuff.
Yeah.
And I didn't really plan for that.
Yeah. I'll take that up on Sunday. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Would you say a little bit about how to regard the chants and prayers that we do?
Thank you, Robert. Yes. Steve, could you give me one of the chant booklets, please? As far as chants and prayers, compared to the Tibetan tradition, we're pretty minimalist here. One of the ones we'll be doing, which is on page 5 here, first is homage to the perfection of wisdom, and then it just runs through different aspects of the spiritual practice, and it's a way of reminding. It acts as a reminder of important themes in the practice. So, for instance, the ultimate foe, the Lord of Death, can come at any time. Give me energy to live a life of no regret. Well, most of the time we're just going through life as if we'd live forever, but it's not true. Death can and does come to people unexpectedly. And we had a tragic but very vivid example of that with the tsunami, where on the island of Aceh, tens of thousands of people, their lives were taken just like that, with no warning whatsoever. Just bang. In our circumstances, we think it can't happen here, but it can. And so, since we don't know when we're going to die, it's the view is it is important to live each moment completely. That's how you live a life of no regret, by living each moment completely. So that's one function that the prayers serve, is support. Reminders and inspiration. Another prayer that we'll do is refuge prayer. And refuge is a metaphor for orienting life towards this principle of being awake. That's what Buddha means, is awake. And when people ask, what makes you special, Buddha, he says, what makes you special? He would say, I'm awake. And it's the Sanskrit for awake. And so, awake from the sleep of ignorance or from the projections of thought and emotion. And so it's a reminder of what we're doing. And The bodhicitta, awakening mind aspect, through the goodness of generosity and other virtues may awaken fully in order to help all beings. That's a reminder of the fundamental motivation. And that's something that matures through practice. And then we use dedication prayers at the end and prayers for the well-being of others, which is a way of arousing positive sentiments, because experience has shown that when you arouse positive sentiments, your mind actually becomes clearer and more open. And that actually creates the conditions for meditation, for the cultivation of attention, as well as reducing the amount of suffering in the world. Is that clear?
Yeah. I pray to you. What does that mean?
Well, do we have that one? Yeah. It's going to mean different things for different people. For some people, they may take that to mean the historical Buddha, and the way that we approach that usually is that by honoring the historical Buddha, you are honoring the potential for that within oneself. So the prayer is actually acting like a mirror. Okay. Other people are engaged in things like Hiran practice. And so this is the particular expression of awakening mind that they're forming a relationship with. For some people, you is their teacher. And so it's a way of deepening that connection and drawing inspiration from it. For other people, you is the awakened mind itself. And they're drawing inspiration from that. So the you can mean very different things for different people depending on their experience, their understanding, and how they approach practice. Okay? Yes? What about them?
Well, how to regard that?
Oh, that's a topic for another. We're not getting into that here. We're not working with those particular principles, and that's a whole other topic in itself. So I'll take that up with you another time. Okay. Any other questions? Yes, David.
What parts of your four-way picture of life are these drawn from, or are they? I know there's a part of sending, receiving, taking, sending, and the other two, I'm not sure about.
No, the other two aren't. The approach that I'm giving you here, or intend to give you here, it's all in the book, but it's not presented in this particular format, so you won't find it. But if you're familiar with Wake Up to Your Life, when you go through this, you will see and understand the correspondences. Okay. So no, there's no help there.
I'm not going to be taking notes on your inspiring words, so I thought I'd,
yeah,
in addition to the recording, I could study what you're saying.
Yeah, that's right. There will be tests. Okay, any other questions? Yes, Gail.
This is a technical question.
Mm-hmm.
Three bells to start, three bells to go, three bells.
You know the drill.
I'm not sure.
It's fine. Okay. Any other questions about the practice? Yes, Deborah.
I'm at the end of your talk this evening, purposeful. I had a question. You were talking about. Now you're being tested.
I can't remember what I said.
This is pretty simple. You were talking about experiencing what arises completely.
Yes.
And in relationship then, you said that the energy doesn't leak out. And I wonder if you could clarify that.
Sure. You ever been angry with someone and not told them? I don't want to cast aspersions. I mean, does it ever happen? Okay. What happens in the interaction? You know, it leaks out, doesn't it? Like, you're not telling them you're angry and they say, could you pass the butter? What do you want the butter for? They say, why are you speaking to me in that tone of voice? Why are you asking me all these questions? Are you angry with me? No! You see? It leaks out. Now, imagine there you are, and you're fully in your experience of anger. You know, they've slighted you in some way, and you're right there, and it's just all seething in you. And they say, could you pass the butter? What happens? That's a good way of putting it. You don't use the butter to express the anger. Right, yeah. And you may have opportunity for this in the retreat, but whether it's attraction, desire, anger, pride, any of these negative and unpleasant emotional reactions, when you actually experience them, you know, desire is this trying to own something which isn't yours to begin with. When you're actually in the experience of the emotion, then you find, when you're really in it, knowing the experience, then you can find, you can, not always, but more often than not, interact with the object free of the emotional reaction. And that's the purpose here. Okay? Last one more question if there is, and then we'll close for the evening. Okay? No? Everybody clear about tomorrow? Thank you all very much. Yes. Sorry? Okay. Well, go ahead. Well, if the person, if you hear a sound, what people tend to focus on is the sound and their reaction to the sound and say, oh, this is disturbing, this is distracting, I don't like this, etc., etc. If they know the sound completely, then they know the silence in which the sound arises. And then that's like the bird with the eggs. But it's all about knowing the experience completely. And one of the ways I found helpful to people is say, when sounds arise and you think they're disturbing, continue to hear the silence that is always there. For instance, when you look at the open sky, what do you see? You see everything that's in it. When you look at a plane, what do you see? you just see the plane. You don't. You stop seeing the sky because the awareness collapses down. And what we're trying to do here is not collapse it down into that partial knowing. So, if the gong sounds and you're just right in the experience of it, that's going to work in exactly the same way. It's coming out from the other direction, but it's going to work in the same way. But a lot of people are irritated by noise. Sometimes at Mount Baldy, Zen Center, hotel across the way, and every now and then, it's a terrible hotel. And every now and then they hold weddings, and they have terrible rock bands at these weddings. So sometimes you'd be sitting in meditation, and it's a very narrow valley, and then you've got this terrible rock music. And people say, how can you meditate with this? Well, you're right in the experience. And then you can actually find that being right in the experience of that, you find a silence within the sound, which I think is what you're talking about. Is that right? You want to follow up?
I'm sorry?
Do you want to follow up?
No.
Oh, okay. I just want to make sure.
Yeah, I just don't think we should be anti-gong.
It's not a case of being anti-gong.
No, I know.
Okay.
If you always assume that you have to stay in the silence and you can't be with the gong, as opposed to just allowing the gong.
Well, that was the point of the question, because this person was saying she liked to be in nature and hated to be in walls. And that's why I was going into all of that, to show that it was actually her reaction to those, not the experience itself, but the reaction to the experience. So yeah, gongs, walls, nature, walls. Okay. For those of you, is everybody clear about the meditation practice for tomorrow morning? Okay. Are you? No, Joan. You are? Okay. Then let's head for bed. It's 9:20. And get a good night's sleep. And I'll see you in the morning. Those of you who are new and haven't done Qigong, please stay with me. And George, can you assist me with that, and we'll go through the Qigong together. If any of you want a refresher in the Qigong, you're very welcome to stay, and otherwise have a good night's sleep. Pick up chant booklets so you have them with you.
Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.